From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1964 at the University of Rochester. Robert Forster completed his Bachelor of Arts in History, but he was more interested in acting. He had starred in a student production of Bye Bye Birdie, and Forster decided to pursue acting, finding success rather quickly with prominent roles in Reflections in a Golden Eye in 1967, The Stalking Moon in 1968, Medium Cool in 1969. His career would see a range of roles, from the esoteric to films like Delta Force. But the Rochester native began to experience the struggle that so many actors eventually face. Getting older, sometimes the phone stops ringing. It's harder to find work. And Forster has said he even considered leaving acting to find another line of work. But a chance meeting with Quentin Tarantino changed all of that. In 1991, Forster had read for a part in Reservoir Dogs, and he thought he nailed it, but he did not get the role. 5 years later, when he saw Tarantino again, his career path took another turn. Well, today, Robert Forster is one of those stars that Rochester loves to claim as one of our own. His more recent work includes a standout performance in Descendants and a guest role in TV's Breaking Bad. And his new film is called The American Side, about a black male scene gone bad that leads to a tangled web, including a long-lost design by Nikola Tesla. The film was shot in upstate New York, and The American Side, the name of the film, refers to Niagara Falls. On Thursday, the Little Theater will show the film. Film critic Jack Garner is going to lead a discussion with the filmmakers afterward. This hour, we talk summer films, and my first guest is actor Robert Forster, who is on the line with us. Bob, thank you so much for taking the time. It's great to have you on the program.
Thank you very much, Evan. That was a pretty good build-up. Thanks. All the way back to the University of Rochester. And by the way, they didn't give me the starring part in that Bye Bye Birdie. I chased a girl, who I later married, into the auditorium and tried to do an audition for the star part. But they put me in the chorus, and I thought, well, I'll stick in the chorus. I might meet the girl. And, of course, I did, and we have three daughters.
See, it all worked out okay.
It did.
Bob, it's great to have you on the line. I also have Jenna Ricker on the line with us as well. And Jenna is director and co-writer of The American Side. Jenna, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me. Hi, Robert. Nice to hear your voice.
Very good. Well, Bob, I just want to, before we dive into on The American Side, I just kind of want to talk about something that I loved seeing you tell the story. You called it your favorite story or your best story, and you told that story about how Quentin Tarantino and that meeting sort of changed things for you. And I'd love for you to tell our audience that story, because I look at you as someone who everything I've seen you in, I've loved you in. And I'm not just saying that because you're on the line with us, or I'm not saying it to genuflect. You're really one of these actors who I think you do everything so well, but you've also said that, you know, you were experiencing that lull in a career in your 50s where you wondered if you were going to get work. So tell us what happened.
I had a 5-year first act to my career ascending, and then 27 years, one job worse than the other. I think you get, you lose your flavor or something, and you start slipping, and one bad thing happens, or a failing series, and one step after another, and by the time I was about 55, I was really at the bottom. I had no agent, no lawyer, no manager, and I was I had given myself a spot at a little coffee shop where I went every morning, as I'm about to do here. It's almost, it's a little after 10 in L.A., and I'm going to go to the spot I eat in now. But I was sitting in that coffee shop, and in walks Quentin Tarantino. My only shot at the time was that maybe some kid who liked me growing up would turn into a movie maker and give me a good job. And in walks Quentin, and I yelled at him, and he came over and sat down, and I had auditioned for him once, so I knew he knew me. And we talked for a while, and during the conversation I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I am adapting an Elmore Leonard book called Rum Punch to a movie." He said, "Why don't you read it?" And I did read it. And about 6 months later, I walked into the Silver Spoon. That's the name of the coffee shop. And here was Quentin sitting in my seat. And as I approached the table, he lifted up this script and he handed it to me. And he said, "Here, read this, see if you like it." This guy gave me a gift the size of which cannot be exaggerated. He gave me a career back, and he gave me buoyancy, which has lasted to this very day, of course. And in the meantime, some of my best stuff, or at least stuff that I've enjoyed the most, I've done since then. So it's been a career with several important spots, and one of them, and that is one of the great ones. And that's a noir movie, like our movie, the American Side. Have you talked about that at all? But
well, we certainly will. I just wanted to kind of, I love that story because I think we're fortunate that chance meeting with Tarantino happened. Because, as you say, maybe it gave you that career back. And we should also mention, Rum Punch was not the name of the film on screen. It became Jackie Brown.
Yep.
You were nominated for an Academy Award for Best Supporting for your role in that film. So you said that you've, in the last 20 years since that film, you've done some of the work that you've enjoyed the most. What film have you enjoyed the most? And we have to take The American Side out of the running. So besides The American Side, and Present Company excluded, what have you enjoyed the most, Bob?
Alexander Payne gave me a great job in The Descendants. Mm-hmm. It was only one scene when I read it, but I socked the kid in the nose, and I said, wow, this is a one-scene part, but it's going to be, this scene is going to get in the trailer of the movie. And then when I got to speak with him and do the audition for him, he said, no, we've written another scene, so there's going to be two scenes. And it turned out to be a two-scene part in a picture shot in Hawaii, which, and I shot the two scenes separately, so I went once for 10 days before they could shoot the scene, and then about a month later, I went back for 2 weeks to shoot one scene. So this was one of the great jobs, put me in Hawaii for a lot longer than shooting a scene or two. What other things? You know, there's an awful lot of them, and I honestly, I don't think of movies as this one or great one or that great one. I think of them as a series of shots. Each shot is what you shoot on a daily basis. You shoot a small, finite number of shots. Each one of those shots has needs that the writer put in there, and the director needs something from you, as well as the guy who set the lights and the one who's watching to see whether you put the cup down in the right spot. Each one of those shots is like a little magic trick that the actor has to learn. You start everything at zero, and you learn the words, something that you didn't know before. You internalize them. You get to know the words so that you can say them the way thoughts come out of your mouth, not the way lines come out of your mouth. And when you hear action, you do your best to execute that magic trick as nicely as possible so that the director can say cut, print, and move on to the next shot. So it's a business of shooting shots rather than shooting films. But I've done an awful lot of stuff since Jackie Brown, and it's satisfying stuff, the kind of thing that you say to yourself, you know, I've gotten older and gotten to be decent at this, and it's one of the things that give substance to life.
Well, when you're out in public now, when people come up and they approach you in public, do they more often say, "Where do I know you from?" Or do they say, "I loved you in X. I loved you in Jackie Brown"?
Well, sometimes they say, "Gee, I think I know you," and I always say, "Yes, I used to be your mailman." And once in a while, I get the laugh. And if they say, "I loved you in Jackie Brown," I am always grateful. And of course, this guy gave me a life back. It's not less than that.
When's the last time you saw Jackie Brown, Bob?
Oh, God, it's been a while. There are times that you don't see a movie. And in the old days, of course, there were a lot of movies that if you didn't see them in the theater, you didn't see them because there wasn't videotape. But Jackie Brown I have, and I'm not sure that I've seen it in the last year or so, but I've seen it a number of times, and it is never a disappointment. There are shots in that movie. There's a great shot where he forces, what's his name? into the trunk of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And then we pull back and pull back, and the music is going. He drives around a long block. He comes back into the into a construction site. He opens the trunk. Bang! He shoots him back. It is one of the great shots of all movies. Somehow, that may not be what you were asking, but
no,
I think of Jackie Brown, and I think of the shot where Robert De Niro gets mad at Fonda, and when they're out shopping, these are surprises that you ask yourself, oh, how'd the guy invent that? And that's what the director does. The actor does a lot less than the director does, but it's a very satisfying proposition. And I have seen Jackie Brown and many times and enjoyed it.
It holds up, no doubt about it. Robert Forster, the great actor, my guest on the line with us, along with Jenna Ricker, who is the director and co-writer of the new film, The American Side, which you can see on Thursday night. Also in studio with me is Bree Merkel from the Little Theater. And Bree, why don't you tell us briefly what's coming up on Thursday, and then we're going to dive into this film here.
All right, great. So on Thursday, The American Side, we're going to have Jenna along with Greg Stirr, who is the one of the stars of the film and also a co-writer. It starts at 6:30 Thursday night. Ticketing is our regular pricing. You can check our website, www.thelittle.org, for more details. And Jack Garner is going to be there to lead a discussion after the show.
This is, Jenna, one of the harder films to describe in a sentence or two that I've come across. So I'm going to allow you to...
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm going to allow... Well, let me back up and say you got Bob Forster, but you have a great cast. And I want to find out how you put it together. But first, I will challenge you to try to describe it in as few words as possible.
Well, okay, here we go. It is a noir-inspired mystery about a conspiracy to control a revolutionary design by Nikola Tesla. How's that?
Yes, well done.
Pretty good?
Very good.
With an amazing cast. That was one of the big joys of making this film.
Well, tell our listeners, besides Robert Forster, who's in the cast and how you got them.
Sure. So in the cast, along with Robert, is Greg Stirr, who is our private detective, who keeps opening doors to these eclectic cast that includes Matthew Broderick, Alicia Baglietta, Camilla Bell, Harris Yulin, Robert Vaughn, Janine Garofalo, Grant Shott, Stephen McKinley Henderson, Joe Grafazzi. I mean, I guess it really does go deep. We when you make a noir, there's an inherently complicated plot, and one of the great tropes is an everyday guy played by Greg Stirr, who may not be as known to audiences, who opens the door to these great actors, these great characters that we do recognize, and that's kind of one of the fun things about navigating the film is who's coming up next, who's coming back, who's giving us a big clue and leading the way. So we did a lot of research about the kind of cast we wanted to fill out the story, and then it really became about hoping that they would trust me, a relatively unknown director, and respond to the material. Hopefully the material would have something juicy for them that they could say, sure, I'll come up to Buffalo and Niagara Falls and give you this time, and trust that you'll make this thing work. And everybody did, and everybody was so game, and it was really, for me as a director, I was working with just people whose work has shaped my filmic language, including Robert. So we did reach out to people who had been in the kind of films that had influenced us. Bullitt's a big influence. And, having Robert Vaughn join the cast was huge. Jackie Brown's an influence, having Robert Forster join us. The score is by David Shire, who did The Conversation and All the President's Men. And all of these things were influences. And, one thing I tell young filmmakers who ask me, what advice I may have, is just never to say no to yourself. Someone else can say no to you, and that's part of how it works. But you've got to be willing to ask, and I think we We did ask, and we really got lucky with who came on board.
If we could,
we also had a great script.
Oh, go ahead, Bob.
The script was, listen, I was jealous as hell for Greg Stur's part, who wrote it, and it had great wisecracks. It was full of the kind of stuff that is much fun in a movie. Banyan, the first detective picture that I did, television show back in 1972, was full of the period wisecracks, which defined a certain kind of that movie, and there were plenty of those in the American side. And you had I had only seen Niagara Falls as a child, and in the movie Niagara with Joseph Cotten and Marilyn Monroe, it has never been as nicely shot as in your movie, as in the American side. It is a feast for the eyes. What a beautifully shot movie of a place and one of the wonders of the world.
Well, if we could, I'd love to listen to a brief clip here from the film. And as much as, you know, this isn't in the first 5 or 10 minutes, but I don't think we're giving too much away. I'll just set up and say that after going over the American side of the Falls in a Barrel, Charlie visits Sterling Whitmore, Bob Forster, to find Nikki. Now, Charlie realizes that Sterling was working with Emily Chase all along. Their goal was to find both pieces of Tesla's notes on the Tin Man. Both men realize that Nikki is the only person who can make sense of the notes, and because of this, is in danger, and they rush out to find her.
After 2 a.m., a man makes nothing but bad decisions.
Where's Nikki?
You smell like the lake.
Come on, you and Emily all along.
Look, I only got a few laps to go. I don't need money. I want adventure.
Then why weren't you in the barrel?
Jesus and the 12, is that what happened to you?
Where's Nikki?
The American side? They sent you over and...
Where is she?
How the hell would I know? What was it like going over the brink? No points off for being a reluctant astronaut.
FBI had everything but the where.
Somebody stole the barrel. Get it?
The date, the time, the contact is all there. 0600, 19 September, Celinda. You tell me the place.
God save us from the gifted amateur. Celinda ain't a who, it's a where. Three sisters. Asenat, Angeline, and Celinda.
Is this what I think it is?
Tin Man.
Tesla's perfect soldier.
In theory.
In practice. The only thing more valuable is someone to put it together. I'll drive.
That, you know, you can just get a sense right away, Jenna, of kind of the style, like, as you said, you know, a noir film, the stylized dialogue. So tell me a little bit about what you're going for with the way you're writing for these actors, this incredible cast you had.
That's such a great question. Well, first, you want to write something that feels compelling, a page-turner, something when you're doing a mystery that's got these noir elements and these conspiracy theory elements, you really want to hope that you're the reader's driving through the script, trying to, you know, stay with the threads and compelled to move forward. But on top of that, every one of these scenes that happens, you know, you should be getting, as an audience member, you should be getting elements of, you know, clues to the greater mystery, whether you're fully on board each time or catching up a little bit later, which is all part of the fun of a mystery. But you should be having these things happen scene to scene. And so you get these great opportunities to try to figure out and try to shape, like, really juicy, really fun, really intriguing scenes for these characters. And the characters have to live in this world. We have to buy they live in this world. And within that world, the world that particular character lives in. So, for example, Sterling Whitmore, Robert's character, you know, he's this guy who, he loves adventure. He's made his money, he's made his wealth in technology, and now he just, I mean, he has nothing but fun trying to, like, you know, piece these things together. But his real joy is trying to master the power, you know, of Niagara Falls. And so he has this whole other, you know, subplot that is weaving throughout the film, and ultimately in the scene we just heard, you know, we discover that the only person to survive the American side, as the barrel history goes, is, you know, people have gone over, is Charlie Pazinski, our lead character, you know. And so it's, you just have fun. Everyone actually has, you know, something that they want, but they have a deeper side to them. And that's what makes, I think, it fun for the actors. You know, Matthew Broderick would say about his character, I love the fact that I can't tell if I'm the bad guy or not, like all the way until the end. Or Camilla Bell, who plays Emily Chase, saying, I love that you can't peg me, you know, as whether or not I'm the femme fatale. And when we screened in New York City, we had a lovely run here. And this noir expert, Foster Hirsch, who's written some of these seminal books on noir, had said that we tricked him. He didn't realize who the femme fatale was because we had subverted his expectations so much. And that's a lot of joy to hear as, you know, writers of something, of a genre that's so dense. So, you know, we had a lot of fun. And those one-liners, Robert, we get a lot of people, you know, emailing or posting on our social media afterwards saying, God, I wish I came up with that line.
Well, and Bob, for you, we talked about the span of your career and, you know, work sort of ebbing and flowing. You don't have to do a film like this. I'm curious to know what attracts you to a film like this, and then in general, how you decide where and what you want to work on.
Well, you never can, you only have things that are right now. Somebody calls you up, and Jenna, for instance, and says, I've got a picture that shoots in Western New York, and that's appealing already. And Buffalo, I had never been to Buffalo. I'd been through Buffalo, but what a beautiful place Buffalo is. And as they say, they shot Buffalo and Niagara Falls. If you haven't been there, this is a trip to Niagara Falls and Buffalo. It is beautiful. And the genre was right up my alley. So it's as I said, boy, I wanted to say some of those wisecracks, and Greg's part was the part I always played. But as time goes by, you get to play other parts, and including the rich guy that hires him, or maybe he hires him. And so the script is always the first ingredient. The script was good. And I was free to do it, and was delighted to do it. So here we go. Let's have another adventure. And working with Jenna was a delight. There you go. All things pulled together to make a wonderful experience for me.
Bob, you obviously have affection for this script. I'm curious to know, what percentage of scripts that come to you do you find yourself thinking, this is really good writing, or this is really original writing? And what percentage do you think are, I don't know if they're pablum, but they might just be sort of boring or cliche?
You know, the ones that are boring and cliche, you don't do them. The ones you wind up doing, at least I, are the ones that look like they'll be fun to do. First, I have to read them and understand them well enough to say, I can deliver. That's my first step. If I know that I can deliver, then let's see if we can work out the days. How many days are needed? When are they needed? And let's see whether we've got them. So it's a script is always number one. And this was fun to do.
Bob, you've worked with so many actors and over the years, great men and women on screen. Tell me the one name of someone who can just come in almost cold off the street and blow you away with their work.
Well, Sam Jackson was great to work with. He not only knew his words, but he knew my words and everybody else's words. This guy is great. Morgan Freeman is great. This guy can take a piece of dialogue that hasn't been his in the morning and look at it, work on it quickly, and go out there and bang it out. God, there's a lot of good actors around. De Niro was good. I only had a little brief scene, but he did something with some old, hardened coffee creamer I'm not sure it all went into the movie, but I saw this guy working, and I said, wow. Here he took an inanimate bottle of coffee creamer and made something fun out of it. Actors are amazing. I never met an actor that wasn't trying his ass off and who is working diligently to make something good out of whatever shots he happens to be in. So, as I say, it's a game of making shots and finding something that will make this shot worth putting in the movie. So the idea of being an actor is interesting to me, and there are great practitioners out there. George Clooney, fun guy, and brought a humanity to that part. Guy whose wife was in a coma, and you believed him every single step. So, actors in general, I am always thrilled watching people up on the screen and saying to myself, I wonder how he does that. It's always a little mystery, but some are really good at it.
It's been a great pleasure talking to Robert Forster, an actor, Jenna Ricker, the director and co-writer of the new film, The American Side. Jenna, before I let you go, we're going to see it at the Little Theater on Thursday night at 6:30 for an event, and then I know we're going to have a nice panel discussion afterward. For you, how has the film been doing? I mean, it's obviously a very competitive industry. How's The American Side been doing?
The American Side's been doing, you know, it's exceeded our expectations, especially for, you know, in this business, what we would call a small indie. It looks much bigger, you know, but it's a small indie, and we've been thrilled. The reviews have been great. The audience response has been great. And, you know, when we've done these Q&As, it's actually been a lot of fun for us to connect with our audiences in the different cities that we've gone to. You know, after the little, we'll head to San Francisco and L.A. and Seattle and Chicago. So it's been a lot of fun to actually be with the film as much as possible when it plays. And Rochester, of course, you know, so much of our local crew came up from Rochester. It's going to be great to bring it back almost home, close to home, from where we shot it. So we're really looking forward to it.
We'll see you Thursday. And then, Bob, what's next on your work lineup?
You know, I am working on a picture in Salt Lake City, another noir movie. It's called Small Town Crime, and I'm working on it now. I'll be going back to Salt Lake City. And if you remember, 25 years ago, there was a television series called Twin Peaks. They're making a new one. And I got a call from David Lynch some months ago who said, you remember you didn't work on the first one. He had offered me a part on it, but I was already committed at the time. And I said, sure. And he said, well, we're doing it again, and I'd like to have you with us this time. So that is a big project that will come on to Showtime in a year or so, Twin Peaks.
Very cool. Bob, thank you for the time. You're so generous with your time for us today, and we're looking forward to seeing The American Side and much more of your work as you continue in your career. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Evan.
And Jenna Ricker, good luck with the film. We'll see you on Thursday night. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Great talking with everybody and wonderful listening to Bob's stories, always.
You got it. We could listen to Bob all day. We got to take a short break. We're going to come back with Bree Merkel from The Little Theater. And Adam Lubiteau is the film critic for City Newspaper. He has seen The American Side. We're also going to talk about the forthcoming summer film season. I'm going to ask them what they're looking forward to, if they're dreading Ghostbusters or excited about it, and a lot more when we come back here. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, did County Executive Cheryl DeNolfo explain everything she needed to explain in her news conference about Comita and I-Square? We will talk about what happens next with Comita now that only 3 of the 7 board members are left and how they're still going to steward our tax dollars. Then, second hour, do millennials need special work considerations? Talk with you Wednesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Bree Merkel is the special events manager for The Little Theater. Adam Lubiteau, the film critic for City Newspaper. Hello to both of you.
Hi.
Hi.
That was fun, wasn't it, with Bob?
Yeah, that was amazing.
Robert Forster, you know, he has had this interesting career. I loved the Tarantino story. And I was asking Bree and Adam if they'd heard that before. I love that story because I came across him telling it online, and I knew I wanted him to tell it for this audience here because, you know, he's telling the story of almost quitting acting and then bumping into Quentin Tarantino. All of a sudden, you've got 20 years of a great career. What did you make of that, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, Tarantino is great at sort of giving people their comeback, and it's great that he was able to do that for Forrester because, yeah, he was fantastic in Jackie Brown.
Yeah, and that film, I don't know when the last time you saw it. Do you think it holds up?
I watched it probably about a year ago, and I think so. It definitely does. It's underrated for Tarantino, but it's up there in terms of my favorites.
All right. Well, Bree, again, one more time. Thursday night, you've got The American Side. This is your chance to see it. It's at 6:30, and then following the film, you're going to have who?
We are going to have director and co-writer Jenna Ricker. We're going to have co-writer and star of the film Greg Stewart. And we're going to have Jack Garner moderating. It should be really fun.
A lot of fun on Thursday night. Now, there's a lot more coming down the pike for summer films. And, you know, this is sort of weird being here with Bree talking about, you know,
yes. I agree.
No, not just in general. That wasn't like, there was not a period at the end of that sentence. I was actually going to continue talking. Weird being here with you and then talking about big blockbustery films because I think of The Little as, you know, something a little more intimate. But you guys kind of have a range of films that you show, right?
Yeah, this isn't our blockbuster season coming up. Oscar time is our blockbuster season. The fall is kind of, you know, our summer blockbuster time. But we do have some really good films coming up, and I'll try to squeeze in a little info about those too. So.
Okay, well, I'm going to work through the list here, and Adam has sent a long list of films, you know, and I will start by asking you this. What excites you the most about what's coming out of Hollywood this summer, Adam?
In terms of specific films,
yeah.
You already mentioned it, but I'm looking forward to Ghostbusters.
You are.
I am. It's probably the biggest question mark of the summer, and possibly the most controversial, for lack of a better term.
Well, but Adam sent me this huge list. Let's see, that's July 15th for Ghostbusters.
Okay? Yes. All right. And we were talking about before that the trailers have sort of underwhelmed me and a lot of people.
Actually, I want you to tell the listening audience what you told me, which made me feel a little bit better. Because when I heard about the new Ghostbusters film, I loved the original. I thought Ghostbusters 2 was a mess, but the original is a classic. And I was excited. I thought all-female cast, they'll be fun. There were names that, you know, I thought could do good stuff. The trailers have been really underwhelming, and I said, oh, man, if this is the best you got. But you actually had a different take. What was that?
I think it was actually Brie who mentioned that, but right, well, in terms of...
It was, we agreed.
Definitely.
No, it's okay. Go for it.
It's sometimes a bad sign when a trailer is too good in terms of all the good stuff is in there already and you don't get anything new and exciting when you actually watch the film.
Which is like half the Will Ferrell movies I've seen. And I love Will Ferrell, but half the time the trailers for his films are just about everything worth watching.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So I'm hoping that it's going to be amazing and that they're saving all of that for us to go to the theater and see it.
Now, is that just your brain sort of having this confirmation bias that they must be holding back on the good stuff?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I love all of those women. I can't wait to see them, you know. Melissa McCarthy is so funny. Kristen Wiig, who's also from Rochester. Maybe we can get her to come on the radio.
Leslie Jones, Kate McKinnon. And that's just... On the female side of the cast.
And Paul Feig, the director, has sort of proven that he's good at handling funny women. He directed Bridesmaids and The Heat, and those were great. So
there has to be a ton of pressure on him, Adam, though, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The sort of outrage that followed the announcement of the casting of four women as Ghostbusters.
You mean the ridiculous misogyny?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It was really, really ridiculous misogyny.
That was implied, but yeah.
Well, but we can say it. That part was obviously ridiculous. I think the fan base, though, has a right to be a little nervous. But two important points here. First of all, if the movie is awful, to me, it does not change the fact that the 1984 film is still great. Does it change anything to you? Does it cheapen that film to you?
No, absolutely not. It's not like that movie gets erased from existence when this comes out.
Agree. Brie?
Yeah, no. I mean, I think that it's crazy watching it because I don't remember anything else that's been so set up to fail where everybody's just waiting for this to happen. So I really hope that they just knock it out of the park and just kind of, you know, shut everybody up who has all of these preconceived notions of what the movie's going to be.
Absolutely.
Adam, do you agree with Bree that right now there's almost a sentiment that the film will be bad? It's kind of starting to snowball this expectation?
I think so, but I have faith that won't come to be, and we'll be happy once the film gets released.
All right, that's July 15th. All right, Adam and Bree, what else do you hear? I could go down the list here, but the one that I see being previewed everywhere that's out next week, I think, is a film called Popstar with Andy Samberg. And it seems to be a very spoofy take on modern celebrity. Adam, what do you know about this? Any hope that this will be good?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. The trailers have made me laugh a lot. Andy Samberg is great, and he's sort of playing a ridiculous pop star in the vein of like Justin Bieber, and it sort of looks like sort of a almost This Is Spinal Tap kind of take on modern pop music. So I'm hoping it'll be good.
Yeah, it's from all of the guys, The Lonely Island, who did the SNL digital shorts that were so hugely popular, and I think that it has a lot of potential to be really funny. I'm worried that because I don't know a lot about Justin Bieber, and that maybe I'm going to miss a lot of the jokes. Like, maybe it's going to skew younger because of that. But I'm really excited to see it, definitely.
I mean, at the very least, you get to see Seal get eaten by wolves, which is what we see in the trailer. But I don't know necessarily that you have to know much about Bieber. To me, it looks more like a commentary on the ridiculousness of modern massive celebrity. And Adam, as a critic to you, are you going there 100% for laughs, 90% for laughs, and 10% social comedy or commentary? I mean, does a film like this, should it at least have a message, or does that matter to you?
It's a nice bonus, I think, especially for that type of movie. I'm not going in for extremely deep insights, especially
right,
as we said,
right.
Seal being chased by wolves. But
yes.
Yeah, I'm hoping to laugh, and any extra is icing on the cake.
You, by the way, you invoked one of my favorites, which is This Is Spinal Tap. If this is the modern version of that, then it would be a huge success, because at least to me, that is a classic. To you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's one of the all-time great comedies.
I say turn it up to 11, like twice a week, at
this
least.
One goes to 11. That is fabulous. Okay, so let me just sort of ask you guys to guide us through here. I mean, I see kids' movies. I see, you know, sort of would-be blockbusters. So, Adam, next up for you, what's exciting to you that's coming from Hollywood this summer?
I'm really looking forward to Kubo and the Two Strings, which is a stop-motion animated film from Laika, the studio who did Coraline and Paranorman, and everything they've put out has been phenomenal. And Paranorman is up there with my all-time favorite films. So I'm looking forward to this one. It's sort of a samurai mythology adventure story.
Kubo and the Two Strings is what it's called. August 16th for that one, with the vocal talents of Charlize Theron, Rooney Mara, Ralph Fiennes.
Fiennes.
Ralph Fiennes and Matthew McConaughey. But why is that, you know, why is this genre of film interesting to you, Adam?
I'm always, I appreciate the stop motion medium. I sort of, it boggles my mind the intensive amount of work that's involved.
Oh.
And as I said, the studio, all their films have been stop motion, and they've been gorgeous and great stories in addition to that. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Bree?
All right. I'm going to give you one blockbuster and one indie choice.
Okay.
And I'm just going to say it, Star Trek Beyond. I'm really excited for that movie. I am a big Star Trek fan.
All right, so I'm going to upset part of our audience here, the Trek audience, because this is just like the next Star Trek film. I'm not even familiar. Star Trek Beyond?
Star Trek Beyond is the third in the reboot from J.J. Abrams. I don't think he's directing this one, but he's still involved. I just watched the second one last night, and it holds up. And it's a really successful reboot of the Star Trek story, and great action sequences, a lot of fun, the right amount of nostalgia. You should watch them, Evan. They're really good.
Okay. Adam?
Yeah, the new director, I believe, is Justin Lin, who actually was on the Fast and Furious movie. So I'm interested in how that goes, since it seems like that might mean this is going to be a little more heavy on the action and less on the science of the science fiction, which is, I know some people have had problems with the reboots, the J.J. Abrams era of Star Trek.
All right, hold on. So a quick education for me, please.
Mm-hmm.
The reboots, this will be the third in the series since it was rebooted by Abrams, right?
Yes. Correct.
Okay, so Abrams is behind the Star Wars and Star Trek reboots. And so far, Episode 7 of Star Wars, generally beloved from what I've seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Star Trek, I'm seeing Adam and Bree sort of disagreeing on how good.
Oh, do you not like it?
I liked the first one, the original, the rebooting. And then the second one I felt like was a notch down.
Okay. Well, yeah. I loved The Wrath of Khan growing up. I thought that movie was fantastic. And the second one is a reboot of The Wrath of Khan. And
do we at least get the yell Khan?
Oh, yeah. There's a great part where they yell Khan. Yes.
All right. So at least you get that. So you liked it.
I liked it,
and Adam did not.
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay. All right. So this third one now, is Abrams tied to this anymore or no?
He's producing, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because he has given a lot of control, it sounds like, in the next Star Wars film to a different director, correct?
Yes.
Yes,
who that is, I cannot remember. But
I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay, but the point is, you know, so he's sort of helped relaunch these, but then he kind of takes his hands a little bit off the wheel.
Yeah, I think he's going into more like creative visionary mode. You know, he's sort of shaping the way he wants something to be and then handing the reins over to people who understand what he's going for. That's how I'm taking it with a lot of things.
All right, so before we go to your indie one, isn't there a new... Doesn't Star Wars also have like this... not episode 8, but like episode 3.5 or something like that? You know, every other year they're releasing kind of a backstory movie. Isn't that happening?
Yeah. They're alternating between the sort of main storyline of the whole series and then alternating that with side stories. And then that one is going to be Rogue One in December.
Okay, that's December. That's not this summer.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's coming. Bree, you said you also wanted to give us an indie kind of a pick.
Yes, I have an indie pick too, and I've seen this one. It's called Dark Horse, and it's a documentary. And it's about a small village in Wales, and true story, obviously. Everyone in the town pools their money together and buys a racehorse. And I don't want to give too much away about it, but it's a great documentary and a great summer documentary because it's really heartwarming. And I think a lot of times the movies that end up getting talked about in the press that are documentaries have really heavy subject matter, are really serious. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but this is one of those movies that you leave feeling connected to a whole different part of the world. And it's an underdog story. And I just really loved it.
Okay. I want to ask about a film called The Founder. That's August 5th. That's already getting some Oscar buzz. And in talking to Robert Forster earlier this hour, an actor who talked about his own sort of mid-50s struggles to get work and feeling like the industry was pushing him out, that he might even have to find other work, and then having this later career renaissance. You talk about a renaissance. Michael Keaton is on a run right now. And Michael Keaton plays McDonald's founder Ray Kroc in what is being billed as a possible Oscar contender in a film called The Founder. Adam, any expectations or thoughts about that film?
I'm really interested to see what they do with that story, since there are a lot of different directions they can go. The director, John Lee Hancock, did Saving Mr. Banks and The Blind Side. So he's got sort of his previous films have been very sort of on the sentimental side, and I feel like that's not the direction that this story is going to go. So I'm interested to see how that plays out. And as you said, Michael Keaton is usually great, so I'm looking forward to his performance.
Does he deserve the praise he's gotten for his last couple of years of work?
I think so. I mean, Birdman, I had mixed feelings about the film itself, but he was fantastic, and Spotlight was a film that I loved.
Loved Spotlight. Yeah, I didn't see Birdman. And I've heard a lot of sort of division about Birdman itself because of some of the stylistic choices, et cetera. But I haven't heard anybody say Michael Keaton wasn't good.
Yeah, no. Well, that's because you can't say that.
he was that good.
Yeah, okay. I think so.
Okay. Thoughts on The Founder?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely excited to see it. I think that Michael Keaton's just on a crazy streak right now, and I want to see him in that role. So, and I think he could be up for like a three-peat, you know, he was nominated for an Oscar for, was he for Spotlight as well? I'm trying to remember.
I think Ruffalo was nominated for supporting and not Keaton.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right. Yeah. Well, okay. So maybe just the movie, but you know, I think that he's so on fire these past few years that I'm really excited to see him in that role. And yeah, I mean, who isn't interested in a story about Ray Kroc? I think that in itself is going to be interesting. So,
but Adam, you said they could have gone in different directions. You know, what do you think they could have done?
I mean, whenever you get sort of a larger budget film about like a corporation, there's always like the idea that they could be just a huge advertisement for McDonald's kind of thing. And it seems, at least judging by the trailer, that that's not how this is going to be. It's sort of a warts and all sort of not glowing portrait of Kroc.
All right, I'm looking at some other films on the list that are forthcoming this summer. For parents, there's a few options, and now with a four-year-old who's just about ready to start going to the theater to see more films. I mean, we've done sort of the film festivals, the short films. But we're just about ready to go see. Everybody tells me I've got to see The Incredibles, which I've not seen. Adam, have you seen The Incredibles?
I have. It's great.
It's great?
It's I think, one of the best superhero movies.
Okay, so I've been told that got to do that. At 4 years old, too young, or is that okay?
I think four is for The Incredibles. I think it's fine, yeah.
I was going to say maybe slightly young, because there's a lot of brawling and action. So I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
All right, I'm looking and I'm looking at now the BFG, for example. And Steven Spielberg is adapting the Roald Dahl classic there. And I don't know, this is July 1st. Is this purely a kid's film? I mean, if you go back and read some of Roald Dahl's stuff, I have to admit, as an adult, I went back to it and I went, I don't know if I want my son diving into some of this. Pretty intense at times.
That's one of the things I like about his books, in that he sort of straddles the line and isn't afraid to make his story for kids dark and sometimes kind of scary. But I think with Spielberg heading things up, I don't think it'll get too rough.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely excited to see this one.
Finding Dory, is, I guess, the sequel to Finding Nemo. Is that right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's going to be a must-go for some families.
I think so, especially since Finding Nemo is one of Pixar's bit most successful movies that I think a lot of people are looking forward to it.
All right, still a to-be-announced date in June, De Palma. What's De Palma?
De Palma is a documentary, basically an extended interview of sorts with director Brian De Palma, directed by Noah Baumbach, where they sort of have a sit-down interview going through De Palma's entire career from the 70s through today. And I've heard great things, since he's sort of very candid about his missteps as well as his successes. So it should be interesting, especially for film fans.
Yeah, it's going to be a must-see if you're into De Palma films.
Bree, how do you decide who decides at the Little? I just gave you all the power. How does the Little decide what's coming in?
Yeah, it's not all me at all. So we have a general manager that decides most of our regular runs, and what I help do is any of the special things you see, like series or programs like that. But we also have a big collaborative spirit there, and we all talk about movies that are coming in. So we just try to make educated guesses about what our audience will like. Sometimes we get to see the movies and we have something that we're really passionate about. And sometimes we're just watching trailers like everybody else and saying, oh, that looks really cool, and we want to get that here.
There's a film that is a loosely fictionalized dramatization of the first date between Barack Obama and Michelle Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Southside with You.
Yes.
Yes.
That is a movie, yeah.
end of August.
August 19th.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was at Sundance this past year, and the buzz has been really positive. People are sort of comparing it to Richard Linklater's Before Sunrise, Sunset movies, if you've seen those, sort of romantic, very talky, but really interesting, and sort of the eventual presidential aspect of it makes it interesting in itself.
Yeah, it's a really fun gimmick, I think, this sort of date night between two of the most well-known people in the world.
I don't know if Barack and Michelle consulted on the film, but...
I don't think they did.
Probably
no.
Not. Yeah, no. All right, so we're down to about our last 90 seconds, and you can kick off your summer film season. It's not quite summer, almost, but on Thursday night, the Little Theater is showing The American Side. Adam, you had a chance to see it.
I did.
And, you know... A little hard to follow is what I've been told, but interesting. What's your short review of it?
I appreciated it's sort of how well it captured the feeling of 1970s conspiracy thrillers and film noir, while sort of giving it its own spin. And I really appreciated the use of sort of the upstate New York locations, Buffalo and into Niagara Falls, where I think a lot of filmmakers could have sort of made it stand in for just sort of an anonymous city, but it feels very much of Buffalo. And I like that about it.
Good cinematography?
Yeah, definitely.
One of the reviews have been pretty good. One of the criticisms is that it's a little too winky, you know, sort of wink-winky at, you know, real film noir buffs, but it might be a little then dense for those who are not into the genre. What do you think?
Yeah, I think if you're a fan of those sort of films, there's definitely a lot of references and homages that you can sort of pick out as you're watching. But I didn't think that took anything away from the story.
It doesn't exclude those who are not into the genre, then.
Right.
And it is an amazing cast. So, Bree, it's been fun this hour. Thursday night, 6:30, what's going on?
We've got The American Side at the Little with filmmakers Jenna Ricker and Greg Stewart. Tickets are still available. You can get more details at www.thelittle.org. And Jack Garner is moderating.
Very good. And our thanks to Jenna Ricker, the director who joined us earlier this hour, along with Robert Forster, Rochester native and actor who is in that film, sharing thoughts on the film and his career earlier this hour. Also, our thanks to Bree Merkel from The Little. It's not weird to have you in studio. It's actually great to have you in studio.
Thank you.
It's always fun. I like talking films with you.
It is fun.
And Adam Lubiteau, come back to sometime here. Film critic for City Newspaper. That's where you can read his work. You can find him on Twitter, Lubitow. Nice having you here as well, Adam.
Thanks, Evan.
All right. Great afternoon here. Our thanks to... Oh, let's see here. Kat Schwarz is the engineer. She's looking at me like you're running out of time. Deprina Gutboldo is the intern. Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great afternoon.